Accession number 18269, Real One.
Jim Dale, Real One. Where were you born, please?
Yes, in Woolwich, London, SE.
Which year was this?
1914.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Woolwich?
No. We actually lived in what was known as London Street, Greenwich. And then when my father was called up for service at the end of 1916, we moved to Wootton in Surrey, where we had a number of relations, mostly based around Abingdon Common.
So you went to school in Wootton, did you?
Actually, I went to school at Abingdon Common Primary School, I suppose they called it, until I was nearly 11, and then I went away to boarding school in Ardingly, Sussex.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
Almost 17.
So we're talking about 1931?
Yes, that's right.
Did you get a job when you left?
No, that's one of the problems. It was towards the tail end of the recession, 1929 onwards. And so jobs were few and far between, and particularly being resident in Abingdon Common at that time, we were living rather out in the sticks, to use a modern expression. And so, for the best part of 6 months, I was completely unemployed. Ultimately, through my father's regimental association, I did ultimately get a job in London with the Atlas Assurance Company in the city.
What regiment was that?
London Rifle Brigade, part of the 25th London Regiment, I think it was. And I did get a job there, first in the accountants department and then in what was known as the accident underwriting department for 6 years.
What job were you doing when war was declared?
I was still working for the Atlas Assurance Company. It was a combination of new business underwriting in the accident department, which is separate from motor and fire insurance and marine and aviation departments. I spent a fair amount of time doing burglary surveys. And in the meantime, I was doing evening studies for associate of the Chartered Insurance Institute. When, in 1939, I took the final exams, and that was in April, and I knew then perfectly well that the war was bound to come, and so I felt I really ought to find out something about fighting wars, and so I volunteered as territorial in my father's regiment, the London Rifle Brigade, which, very conveniently, had their headquarters only a mile away from the city centre.
When would this have been, when you joined the London Rifle Brigade?
Well, that would have been, I joined, it would have been April 1939.
Was it easy to get in?
Yes, no problem at all in that way.
What kind of training and experience did you have with them before the war was declared?
Well, just the usual basic infantry training, small arms, but it's mostly small arms and, as far as I can recollect, drill parades. I really can't recall much about the detail. I know we went down to the New Forest in August 1939 for the usual fortnight's field training and camp, but I can remember little about that, except that we did an exercise called harbouring, which apparently just involved troops being carried in lorries and seeking cover in woods and under trees. Presumably that was really just an exercise for the senior officers up to brigade position. As far as the troops were concerned, we just didn't know what was going on or the why or the wherefore. And I don't remember doing anything in the way of infantry training in the form of field exercises. I think largely it's a matter of organisation and drills.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, I did. Ultimately, we were called up on the 1st of September, and my company of the LRB was billeted in the Great Northern Hotel, which is really part of Liverpool Street Station. And I remember quite distinctly sitting on my mattress in the Cambridge dining room and listening to Neville Chamberlain's announcement around about 11 o'clock or midday one Sunday morning.
Cambridge dining room?
Yes. It was a large dining room downstairs called the Cambridge room.
What did you feel about the war declaration?
Well, I think my reactions were, as far as I can recall, were quite unemotional. I think, like everybody else, we realised that war was coming, and any political negotiations were a complete waste of time.
Which company were you in? Do you remember?
No, I can't remember. Which particular company? No, I can't remember at all.
What happened to you next?
For the next few weeks, first of all, we were guarding Liverpool Street Station against IRA explosions. Later on, we did a spell. About every 3 or 4 days, we went down to the Tower Bridge and lived in the bridgekeeper's apartments and did 48-hour duties, I think it was, altogether, simply guarding the Tower Bridge again against any IRA attacks.
Was there any trouble at all?
No, there was absolutely no trouble at all. It's just rather eerie wandering around underneath the towers of the bridge below the road level. Everything was quiet, everything was dark, and really rather eerie.
Were you proud to be in the London Rifle Brigade?
Oh, yes, I was proud enough. it, as I say, have said, it was my father's regiment, and so it's like a lot of army types, it follows on from one generation to the next.
And then after this?
Well, after then, we did a spell up on Hampstead Heath, and presumably we carried out a bit more in the way of infantry training, although I can't remember much about the detail.
Which battalion of the LRB were you in?
Well, as far as I know, there was only one battalion at the time, although probably at some stage, with increased numbers, they were divided into 1st and 2nd battalions, I suppose. But I never really heard anything much about that. It's one of the points about being in the other ranks at the time, that really you just knew nothing about anything. Presumably all part of the security attitude. Dangerous talk costs lives, and so on.
So you were doing this training in London?
Well, we were at Hampstead Heath for a short time. And then I think the next thing that I can recall is that the Germans invaded Holland, and we were immediately carted off to Northolt Aerodrome to go and guard that against aircraft landings or parachutists.
Had there been any question of your going to France?
No, I never heard anything of that sort at all. I never had any warning about being prepared to go overseas. But, no, I don't think we'd had enough training really to be fit to go into what might call, obviously be the front line in a very short time. After that, I seem to remember being on guard duties at what was then known as Croydon Aerodrome, where Imperial Airways were about the only people using it. And whilst there, they called for volunteers who were familiar with riding motorcycles. And so I gave my name in for that, and in no time at all, I was sent up to a place called Godmanchester, just outside Huntingdon, to form part of a motorcycle anti-parachutist platoon.
Of the LRB?
No, this was a completely independent unit as far as I knew.
Did you get some training with them?
Well, we had a little bit of training, but it was mostly confined to getting used, training all these people to ride motorcycles, because a lot of the fellows had never used a motorcycle, which seemed a bit odd. However, so a lot of the time was taken up with training in, the beginners how to use motorcycles. We had an odd collection of all makes and brands. And one of the difficulties there was that when it came to gear changing, on some motorcycles, the foot change, you had to lift the pedal up. In other models, you had to press the pedal down. So that it was dangerous for fellows to chop and change from one machine to another. We never had any alarms or any. We never had any alarms to follow through, but we, as part of the training, presumably, We were one day ordered to go to Knutsford up in Cheshire, which we duly did, and everybody arrived there. And having reported in, the officer in charge reported in, and we were told to go back and rejoin the battalion at Abington, which is just southeast of Cambridge. So in the same day, we promptly turned around and went all the way back.
So this was just a platoon, was it?
It was only a platoon, yes.
About 30 men?
About 30, yes. One point I do remember about the journey back was that just as we were approaching Cambridge from Huntingdon, we were all driving along in single file, of course, and all of a sudden one of the chaps at the back shot past all of us and raced up to the front and crashed into a road barrier, the usual sort of road barrier that we had in those days.
You mean a wooden road barrier?
No, it's these concrete brick walls and sandbags. You had to zigzag through them, as you probably know. Fortunately, he wasn't seriously hurt. But the clutch cable on his machine was broken. And I think he must have been put into a sidecar and taken on. And I collected the job of riding this motorcycle right through central Cambridge without a clutch cable, which I just managed to achieve by getting engine revolutions just right for changing gear without a clutch.
What had induced him to do that?
I've no idea at all. No idea at all. I can only think that he must have gotten to the wrong gear and got in some way confused and then panicked and didn't know what to do.
Did you at that time expect a German invasion?
Well, as an individual, I can't say that I anticipated an early invasion. In fact, thinking back, I realised that most of the time I didn't seem to be worrying about anything at all in that way.
Did you ever hear the Churchill speeches of the time?
I don't think I did. I don't think I did because we never had a radio and we were always moving around, it seemed, from one place to another and spent most of our time, I suppose, on guard night duties. The next feature I can remember is that I don't know just how, when or where I was at the time, but I was simply instructed to take myself down to 163 Octu at Shorncliffe near Folkestone. And so I spent about the next 4 months from June 1940 until November 1940, I was down there on the south coast. That was extremely interesting because we were there for the whole of the Battle of Britain period. And so we had an absolutely front row view not only of the German bombers coming over, but also our own fighters. And even we witnessed one little naval engagement out in the Channel.
What did you see of that?
Well, of the naval engagement in the Channel, sometime, I think it must have been early July, on a bright summer's day, clear blue sky and brilliant sunshine, marvellous weather, from the harbour wall in Folkestone, where we were on guard duty, we saw a convoy of small coastal vessels sailing past, really, past Dover, probably about 5 miles offshore. And my recollection is that there were about 26 of them, small coastal vessels. And quite frankly, I was astonished, because I thought, well, fancy sending convoy ships through the Channel on a brilliant day like this. And of course, in no time at all, this convoy was attacked by Stuka bombers, practically for the whole of the rest of the day. And you could see the bombers diving down, and bomb smoke and splashes, even though it's 5 miles away, the atmosphere was so clear.
Were any of the planes or ships lost?
Well, I can't say for sure that we could actually see anything, but I do remember that late in the afternoon, when the convoy was still in view, we could only count, my recollection is, 16 ships. So that whether some had gone on ahead or not, I don't know. However, the interesting point was that late in the afternoon, apparently this convoy was also attacked by German E-boats. And as a consequence, the two destroyers which were in Dover Harbour went out to intervene. And even from 3 or 4 miles away, as I was in Folkestone, it was really, really quite thrilling to see the huge bow wave as these two destroyers shot out of Dover Harbour and out to sea. And we could see them, opening fire on the E-boats. And you could see the flashes of gunfire and so on. And then later, of course, the Stuka bombers set about the destroyers, and it seemed as though one of them must have had its steering damaged, because the other one set up a smoke screen, sailed around in a big circle, and seemed to be creating a dense smoke screen to protect the other one. I can't remember after that seeing the destroyers come back into port. Probably I was taken off duty at the time. However, it's an extremely interesting, safe viewing of a wartime action.
Had the local civilians turned out to watch?
I expect those who could from the town itself, but since we were on the harbour wall, which was a restricted area, I can't really say, but I'm sure that a lot of people in the town must have been able to see it, especially from the high cliffs of Folkestone.
Can you tell me what you saw of the Battle of Britain, specifically?
Yes, we had a first-class view of the Battle of Britain day after day. I suppose each day started with around about somewhere between 8 and 9 in the morning, There was usually a squadron of fighters came into Hawkins, probably from Biggin Hill, came forward to Hawkins Aerodrome, which was on the downs just behind Folkestone town. They arrived, as I say, between 8 and 9 in the morning. It's a regular thing. The air raid warning alarms went off at 10 o'clock when the German bombers and whatnot were obviously picked up on radar coming over the channel. And so, of course, one saw the fighters from a distance taking off and getting altitude, and of course had a first class view of all the vapor trails, etc., etc., high in the sky. You couldn't see very much of actual combat, just occasionally catching a minute glimpse of one or two fighters high up. But just now and then one did hear three or four shots from the German aircraft cannon. They were too high to hear the machine guns from the British fighters. But following various actions like that, which went on more or less every day for 6 or 7 weeks, I should think, one did see disasters, of course. I remember once seeing a whim of mine of seeing an aircraft do a vertical power dive straight into the ground. And I did see that. It must have hit the ground somewhere near Hawkins Aerodrome. Whether it was German or a British plane, I don't know. But it was quite striking to see a plane in a power dive going literally vertically straight into the ground. It was, of course, the usual burst of black smoke that you saw when an aircraft hit the ground hard. Conversely, on another occasion, I saw a hurricane that had been shot up more or less over the coast, and it just floated down like a falling leaf and dropped into the sea just off Sandwich. As far as the, of course, we saw all these hordes of German planes when they started the mass daylight raids on London. I remember seeing two columns at a time flying over with their protective fighters, that little tiny silverfish way above even the bombers. Going over in straight column, just like a marching in column of troops. And I should think in each column, it seemed to me there must have been well over 200 planes.